This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
All right, everybody, welcome back. Another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. We're now on this twice a week mode. Feels pretty good. It's exciting. We can kind of catch things in the moment. If you're new to the show, please go to milkshakespod.com. We explain the name in more detail. I'm joined with Brent Johnson, who came up with the dollar milkshake theory. And that's really the core of the milkshake part of our name. And there's just no way for us to describe it here. But we are going to give it context during the show, and we're going to try to give you some context of what's going on in markets, because not everybody follows every single up and down move. And one of our subscribers on YouTube, I think, put it really succinctly. He described our show as turning up nuance and turning off hyperbole. So I really, really like that. I think that's how he said it. That's the general theme. I really appreciated that. And that's the goal here. And it's an important time for us to try to turn down not only the hyperbole, but the noise. Brent, one of your favorite hashtags on Twitter is hashtag people are losing their minds. And I want to highlight that, because we all humans are not rational. And everyone who thinks they're rational is probably more irrational than the next guy. And in moments like these, especially in financial markets, we really see that on full display. And it's in times of being or trying to be hyper-rational that sometimes you miss this emotional force that's happening by the fact that people are irrational. And what I mean by that is you can't get just lost, number one, in the charts. And so there's been a lot of stuff that's been happening that is very emotionally driven, the bank runs. And so a lot of times government policy, monetary policy is really just trying to target that irrational being. Now, we've had over the weekend, we had a bailout of, not a bailout, we had that last week. We had a merger of Credit Suisse and UBS. So I'm going to let you talk about that in a little bit, but I'll tee it up. What was interesting to me is the fact that they wiped out the bondholders, which is somewhat creating more of this irrational behavior, because you completely flip the capital stack upside down. The order of which, you know, who gets paid first in these types of events kind of got thrown out the door. And again, these are things that you talk about where, hey, they can make up the laws as they go, and you kind of need to have your head on a swivel. So that happened. We now see everyone jumping into it's QE all over again, bandwagon, talking about the Fed swap lines, talking about some of the things that they're doing with the bank term funding program, BTFP, which is helping some of these banks with liquidity so there's not more bank runs. And now we're seeing people go way out on the spectrum in terms of irrational, talking about things like Bitcoin going to a million in 90 days and hyperinflation. And this is really, not to speak for you, I think your favorite thing, because this is kind of the core of the dollar milkshake theory, is that people are racing to the end of the story without letting the movie play out. So with all of that being said, I'm going to hand it over to you, Brent Johnson.
Yeah, well, I think it all, you know, everything that's been going on the last, call it, couple weeks is really a perfect summary of everything we tried to do on this show, right? We want to talk about markets. We want to talk about the madness. And in general, we kind of want to talk about the overall thesis that I've put together. You know, and initially we were talking a lot about politics and some sports and stuff, but the finances just trumped it all lately. And I mean, there's plenty of madness to go around, but what's really going on in the last couple of weeks, just in the markets, is completely maddening for some people. And, you know, to your point, one of my favorite hashtags is people are losing their minds. And part of the reason that I do that is I want to draw people's attention to the fact that people are just losing it. And I try to point out other people losing it so that the people hearing me say it don't lose it. When I graduated high school, somebody gave me a card, you know, a graduation card, and it had the poem If on it by Rudyard Kipling. And I had never heard this poem before, and I thought it was the most profound thing I'd ever read. And I have it taped to my computer. I probably read it once a week, maybe more than that. And the very first line is, if you can keep your head when all those about you are losing theirs. And that is 90% of the battle. And I hope what we try to do here is kind of help people not freak out right away, think about things and kind of understand what's actually going on rather than just, you know, getting through the noise and getting the actual signal. And so bringing that back to what's going on now is, you know, part of the reason we're having the issues that we're having is people are losing their minds and they're panicking and they're pulling their money out of the banks. Now, the funny thing is panicking might be the right move. I'm not saying that's not the right move. If you are in a shaky bank, perhaps the right move is to take your money out. But the better thing would be to have thought about this ahead of time and understood what's going on so that you're not panicking when everybody else is panicking. In other words, if you're going to panic, panic first, panic early. Because if you panic when nobody else is panicking, you're probably better off than if you're panicking when everybody else is panicking. And so bringing this back to Credit Suisse, you know, we've been talking about this the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I think it was on our show. It was either this show or some other show I was doing where I said that UBS and Credit Suisse would end up merging. That's what would happen. And, you know, is it a merger? Yes, but it's also a bailout. The Swiss government, I'm sure, in some way or another kind of forced this merger. I don't think UBS really wanted to do this. Initially, UBS offered $1 billion. And then they came up to two, and ultimately it became three. But there's, you know, tens of billions of dollars of backstops and guarantees by the Swiss government. And, you know, I think that was kind of always going to happen. I think it'd be very hard for the Swiss to allow a foreign entity to come in and take over one of their most important institutions. So that was kind of why I thought that would happen. Now, the other kind of maddening thing for most people, and I'll say, I did not expect this, but I'm not surprised at it at all regarding the bonds that you were talking about. What happened was these COCO bonds, these convertible contingent bonds that should be paid prior to equity holders being paid, were wiped out. And instead, the bondholders were wiped out. And instead, the equity holders get a little bit, which is completely the wrong way to do it. And not only that, it's against the law. And so the Swiss government held a special session yesterday to change the law to allow this merger to go through before the markets opened. And this is another thing that I just want people to realize is no matter what you think you know, no matter how certain you are about something, no matter how much homework you have done, you don't know what's going to happen because this is the big, big game. And this isn't a big game. This is the big game. And if governments themselves come under pressure, which they are, they will change the rules to suit their purpose. And so this kind of goes back to my don't lose your head and go all in on one thing, right? Be kind of prepared for anything because this is the type of an environment where anything can happen. And it is, and it's still happening. And, you know, this, you know, it started, who knows where, you know, you can trace the original sin back, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, 40 years, 50 years, 100 years, you know, whether it was the creation of the Federal Reserve, whether it was when we delinked from gold, whether it was the 1986, you know, Plaza Accords, whether it was the 2000.com, whether it was the 2008 financial crisis. There's lots of place where you could kind of trace this back to and who initially started it. But the bottom line is we have a system that is inherently unstable. And when I say that, it's based on trust. And once trust is gone, the design itself comes into question, or the system itself comes into question because of the design. Now, I don't have time to go through the whole way the system is designed right now, but losing trust is what causes these bank runs. And the problem is that then once trust starts to get shaky, the governments, the monetary authorities will come in and they will make these rule changes or they will put these new programs in place. And they think they're trying to shore up confidence. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But what almost always happens, even if it works, what almost always happens is the unintended consequences that these people who don't operate in the real world and only operate on a spreadsheet aren't ready for. And so, you know, and that's what we're dealing with now. Now, all over Europe, other people are saying, well, holy cow, if that bank went bankrupt and my bonds weren't protected, what happens when the next one? I don't want to hold these bonds, you know. And so now that will lead to a crisis. In the U.S., you know, we bailed out, Silicon Valley Bank, which was a big bank. And then a couple days later, Janet Yellen says, well, I don't know if we're going to bail out the small Oklahoma bank. We might, but we don't know. So if you're a small Oklahoma bank, are you going to keep your deposits there? Are you going to move? So that will have unintended consequences. And at the end of the day, the global economy is too big and too complex for 12 people sitting in a room to manage. But these 12 people are arrogant enough to think that they can do it. And they have a lot of power. And so that's why you got to kind of keep your head and be ready for all these unintended consequences, because they've built this Rube Goldberg machine that is inherently unstable. And every time something breaks, rather than dismantle it and build it up with a solid foundation, they put a new pulley on, they put a new ramp on, they tie some string to it. And it's really, it might work for a little bit, but it's going to break at some point. And we're kind of seeing that now.
Yeah, one thing I'll add so that you can continue on that theme is I think people do underestimate how many times they can duct tape it and how many pulleys they can add. So we can all look at the structure and watch it, you know, sway in the wind. But I think there's way too much. The word I would use is enthusiasm to usher in the end of the world. And I think that's, a lot of times when people are pontificating on Twitter and just in the financial world, there's a huge mismatch between the person talking and the person listening and reality when it comes to timing and time horizons. And so that, I think that's another big part of trying to help people maintain rationality. It's a lot of times maybe their ideology isn't wrong. It's just the timeline for when these things can play out is much, much longer than a lot of times people estimate.
Yeah, I mean, and that's right. And so, you know, what I've always done is I have tried to always be ready for anything. And, you know, I personally believe that this is going to take another several years before it kind of finally all plays out. But I'm ready for it to play out tomorrow. But being ready for it to play out tomorrow doesn't mean I'm all in on gold sitting on the top of a mountain in Idaho waiting for the world to end. You know, you can be ready, but still live in the real world. And not everybody has the same answer of how they do that. But the point is to think through all the different scenarios, apply a probability to each of them, and then kind of be ready to them, be ready for them. And, you know, kind of going back to this, you know, or kind of related to this over the weekend, I got into a bit of a discussion on Twitter. And it actually started with Danielle DeMartini Booth was talking with somebody else trying to explain to them what happened last week was not QE. And they were saying it was QE, and Danielle was very politely trying to explain to them that it wasn't QE. And I probably shouldn't have, but I jumped in there and tried to explain why it wasn't QE. And then this started going back and forth. And the reality is someday it might be QE. It could end up being QE on Wednesday, but as of right now, it is not. And then, you know, when I kind of explained this, then they jumped in and said, why are you defending the status quo? And I said, listen, I'm not defending the status quo. I'm just telling you factually what is going on. I'm trying to help you understand what's going on so people can make rational, calm decisions. And then it became, okay, well, even if it's not QE, it's still liquidity. So why does it matter? Well, it does matter because a loan is different than QE, right? And it doesn't mean that it's not liquidity. It doesn't mean that the banks shouldn't, or it doesn't mean that the Fed is acting appropriately. It doesn't mean they're doing the right thing. But it's important to understand what the, you know, even though we live in this maddening world, and even though we might not like the system within which we operate, it's important to understand what it actually is. And definitions actually matter. Because, you know, you can mislead a lot of people based on what it is. And what I mean by that is if it was QE, first of all, if it was QE, that's different than what's going on. And if it was pure QE, markets may have reacted differently today. And they may, you know, it potentially has a different market impact. And so, you know, that's why it's important to understand it. And then the second thing is that QE doesn't even necessarily fix the problem if it's not big enough. And what I mean by that is, we all know that over the last 15 years, that several times central banks have turned on the spigots or done QE or provided stimulus, and eventually that has pushed the market higher. Maybe it didn't do it on the first day, but eventually it pushed the market much higher. And so we've kind of got this Pavlovian response now when we hear QE, go buy risk assets, right? And that's kind of why I was pushing back, is because you shouldn't just hear QE and, you know, have the Pavlovian response, go buy stocks, go buy risk assets. And the reason is because when they are doing these programs, they're trying to fill a hole. Okay. The whole point of these programs is there's a hole in the banking system. There's a hole in the economy, and the Fed is trying to plug it. The central banks are trying to plug it. Now, if they're doing QE and they're putting, I don't know, let's say they're putting $1 trillion in. Sounds big, $1 trillion. But if the hole is 50 trillion, that $1 trillion of QE does not matter, right? So, and that's kind of why, again, why I was pushing back and why I was saying, you know, don't lose your head, you know, be ready, but do your whole homework. Don't just do half the homework, because QE is only half the answer. You know, if they, now, if the hole is 10 billion and they do 20 trillion, or the hole is 10 trillion and they do 20 trillion, then yeah, you know, that hole is going to get filled and it's going to overflow. So get in there, buy it, ride the wave. But until you know that, don't go all in on anything. So anyway, I know I'm kind of rambling here, but these are the times where you really got to kind of keep your head.
Well, like I said at the beginning of the show, the way the subscriber had framed it up for us, I think this episode's another good example. And your point right there about QE highlights that, where nuance matters, right? And here on the show, we want to bring you that nuance and turn off the hyperbole. And so it's very lazy and dangerous to think any type of central bank interaction or interference, however you want to look at it, is QE, is going to put you in a position, because the ultimate market impact or market reaction is not going to be what you think it is, because you're trying to paint everything with this really simple, broad brush. And that's just not how these markets work, especially when you consider the irrational, rational tug of war that goes on. So as much as, again, the principles of what is being done may not align with your ideology, you can hate the Fed all day long. And we are certainly in a similar camp, that this creates all kinds of wealth inequality. It's you know, the Cantillon effect, that the people closest to the Fed and closest to government are going to benefit the most. But it doesn't, you don't get to just suddenly change vocabulary to fit your religion. Right. And look, we're now doing this twice a week, because maybe it's just the timing of things. Maybe we're having fun, but you know, we hope to kind of bring this type of clarity to you, you know, more frequently, because things are starting to escalate, and you know, understanding the rational versus the irrational is going to be in a very important part of getting through to the other side in one piece, and hopefully with an improved, you know, P&L in your investment portfolio. So Brent, I appreciate you jumping on. It's Monday on this recording. We'll do our best to get this out to you right away, but we'll be back at the end of the week to kind of wrap up what has happened. And it's going to be a big one. Before I let you go, we have the FOMC Fed rate policy decision on Thursday. And then you're doing a special recording with Hidden Forces with you and Jeff Snyder. So that's going to be very, very interesting. So between that and our recording and everything that goes on this week, it's going to be fun to reconnect at the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. You know, they announced swap lines last night, so there's a lot of stuff to talk about. We can't get it into it all right now, but we'll try to do a wrap up at the end of the week and see how it goes. It's going to be an eventful week. It's a maddening week, maybe is the right way to say it.
Yeah, it's going to be a maddening week. And because we're doing these twice a week, don't worry when we don't get everything covered. We got another episode coming, so we'll get you up to date on the things that we didn't discuss in this one. So Brent, thanks for coming on. We appreciate your insight. It was very helpful and informative, and I'll see you in a couple days.
All right. Talk to everybody soon.